This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Well, there's a lot of mysteries in everyday life, but in astronomy, there's even more mystery. So there's lots of things I thought everybody knew and they don't know, like the Parker Solar Probe. I thought there was everything to know about the sun. We knew about it already, but that's not the truth. So there's lots of things that we still don't know in astronomy. And sometimes I'm surprised because I thought the sun was very well understood. And I guess it's not. So we will never stop learning. So one thing that I really wanted to get into was this thing about life in the solar system. Is there life in other parts of the solar system? And is there life in other parts of, let's say, our galaxy or other galaxies? And not just that, I was very intrigued when I heard Professor Brian Cox speak about something called the proton gradient, something he said it's necessary for life to exist. And also when he took one of the concepts of physics called entropy and then he applied it to life itself. And just to refresh your memory, he gave an example of the sun shining on a beach all day, the sand absorbs the heat and the energy, and at night it re-radiates all that heat energy back into the other parts of the sky. If it were to keep some of that energy, it would heat up every day and eventually burn away. So Brian Cox said something that really made me think, and it's difficult now especially to get a book on it, but something about entropy, where the sand, when it re-radiates all its heat out, it's not useful energy that it re-radiates out. So it increases the entropy of the universe. Entropy, I guess it's a measure of the disorder or amount of useful energy, where things like gorillas or plants or human beings, we actually, I'm going to find it hard to put it in a certain way, because I could say something and I could be saying the wrong thing. So basically, I think what I'm trying to say is our living things, we make useful entropy, so we increase the order. So where the entropy that is given off by the sand, it's useless energy, but we're on the opposite end of the spectrum. So I guess I should look into that more before I talk about it. And something I brought up last week was the past few weeks I talked about when the universe came into existence 13 point something billion years ago, atoms did not exist. I'm not sure if protons existed. And what I'm going to do after this show, I will look into my book. I have a book called The First 3 Minutes of the Universe, something like that, or it could be even the first 3 seconds. So I believe it took a couple hundred million years for atoms to form. So hydrogen and helium formed. And then when the big stars came into existence, when they exploded in supernovas, they started making other elements. And that is how we have our full periodic table of elements now. So we didn't have that at the beginning, just at the beginning after the Big Bang. So my question was, well, was there the same amount of dark energy and dark matter then that there was now? Or did dark energy and dark matter come into existence later? Did it change its form? The whole thing that they say, dark energy and dark matter, it's unknown what it consists of. So what it's made up of. The stuff we can see, it's about 5% of the universe. The other 95% is dark energy or dark matter. So since energy cannot be created or destroyed, was there the same amount of dark energy at the beginning as there is now, the same amount of dark matter as there is now? And these are all very, very complex questions. And it's not like you can go to a magazine stand, or the libraries are closed now because of COVID, but the internet is always available. So I guess I would have to research that. But that was a very interesting thing that crossed my mind, was the amount of dark energy that was in existence at the beginning of time the same that there is now. Because, as I said, one of the theories of physics that most people know is energy cannot be created or destroyed. It could just take different forms. So it can be converted into another form. So was the amount of dark energy at the beginning the same amount of dark energy now? Because the universe keeps getting bigger, and by that, I guess what is meant by that is the space in between galaxies is expanding. So I don't think our galaxy, our Milky Way galaxy, is getting bigger, or is it? I'm not sure. Because mass and energy are E equals mc squared. They're supposed to be equivalent, so you can't increase the energy, so can you increase the mass? So that was an interesting thing that I started thinking about was, well, the atoms didn't exist at the beginning of the universe, and it took a while for our full periodic table of the elements to be filled out, because only hydrogen and helium came into existence. I'm not sure exactly what time frame it did, but apparently there were no atoms, there was no hydrogen, no helium at the beginning of the universe. So these are things that cosmologists think about. They're super, super cool and super interesting. And how do you find the answer to that? Well, you get a cosmology degree. So anyway, I'm going to talk about other things about astronomy now. One thing that always interested me was galaxies. So I always thought, are black holes the building blocks of galaxies or of the universe, or are galaxies the building blocks of the universe? Are stars the building blocks? So let's read something about galaxies here. Why are galaxies different shapes? So this is by somebody called Donovan Coffey. It was 2 days ago, which is right now it's Monday morning, about 1:30 in the morning. So I'm a night owl. I like to do my work at this time. And so this came out on Saturday, which is the 17th. So I'm going to read it now. Why are galaxies different shapes? So it has a photo, or this is on livescience.com, by the way. Next story I'll read is about Elon Musk, because I believe NASA's time frame to eventually send humans to Mars. I don't know if they'll land on the first trip. They might just go orbit Mars for a while and then come back. So they might not set foot on Mars. But the time frame I'm hearing from NASA is 20 years, 25 years, something like that. So here Elon Musk says SpaceX's first Starship trip to Mars could fly in 4 years. So is that with humans aboard? And when will Elon Musk bring us to Mars? That would be a cool thing to know, that Elon Musk. So I'm going to first read the why are galaxies different shapes? So again, this is on livescience.com. It's dated a couple days ago, which is October 17. So I'm going to start reading. So here's a photo, a picture, and it says an artist's impression of the Wolf Disk, a massive disk galaxy in the early universe. Very fascinating stuff. Look into the night sky and you'll glimpse the stars from hundreds of billions of galaxies. Some galaxies are swirling blue disks like our own Milky Way. Others are red spheres or misshapen, clumpy messes, or something in between. Why the different configurations? It turns out that a galaxy shape tells us something about the events in that galaxy's ultra-long life. So before I read on, I'm going to make a comment here. Maybe that's what will be part of what I say now, might be in this article. So right now we are, I've heard the highest estimate is 400 billion stars in our Milky Way galaxy, a lot of stars. And our neighbor, our next big neighbor is Andromeda. It's got, I believe, 1 trillion stars. So by by means of gravity, we're moving towards each other. And who knows exactly when we're going to merge, but apparently the astronomers say that the two galaxies will merge. And when they do merge, it'll take a while for the final shape to take place, but I believe it'll be a different shape of galaxy. So I believe the Milky Way is a spiral galaxy, and I believe Andromeda is a spiral, so the shape will be different. So as this thing says, it turns out that a galaxy shape tells us something about the events in that galaxy's ultra-long life. So our shape in about 5 billion years might be different because we have merged with Andromeda. And because of that merger, someone else, let's say intelligent life, somewhere else in 5 billion years spies us and goes, ah, there they are. That is a blank, blank, blank shaped galaxy. That means it's a merger between two galaxies. So I think what will happen is our two galaxies will merge and become a different shape. So let's read on. At the very basic level, there are two classifications of galaxy shape, disk and elliptical. A disk galaxy, also called a spiral galaxy, is shaped like a fried egg, said Cameron Hummels, theoretical astrophysicist at Caltech. These galaxies have a more spherical center, like the yolk, surrounded by a disk of gas and stars, the egg white. The Milky Way and our nearest galaxy neighbor Andromeda fall into this category. Okay, here's a little side thing. It says 11 fascinating facts about our Milky Way galaxy. So I'll read that a bit later. That will sound like fun. Fascinating, anyway. In theory, disk galaxies initially form from clouds of hydrogen. Gravity draws the gas particles together. It's wonderful what gravity does. Gravity seems to play a role in so many things. Like, for example, a star. The gravity pulls all the matter together, tries to squish it to a point, and this causes the nuclear reactions to begin at the core. So the nuclear reactions, the nuclear energy and the gravity balance each other, and we have a stable star like ours. So Jupiter also traveled in to our early solar system, and its gravity carved out what our solar system eventually looked like. And its gravity does a lot of things now. For example, if it pulled in comet Schumacher Levy 9 years ago, and it acts like a big vacuum cleaner out there. So it sucks up asteroids or comets that otherwise could have headed towards Earth and destroyed us. So gravity is just an important sculptor. It's a force that does so much to sculpt our universe. So I'll start reading again. In theory, disk galaxies initially form from clouds of hydrogen. Gravity draws the gas particles together. As the hydrogen atoms draw closer, the cloud begins to rotate and their collective mass increases, which causes their gravitational force to also go up. Eventually, the gravity causes the gas to collapse into a swirling disk. Most of the gas is in the rim, where it feeds star formation. Edwin Hubble, who confirmed the existence of galaxies beyond our own only a century ago, called disk galaxies late-type galaxies because he suspected their shape meant they formed late in the history of the universe. And this is another story according to NASA. So, alternatively, elliptical galaxies, what Hubble calls early-type galaxies, appear to be older. Instead of rotating like disk galaxies, stars and elliptical galaxies have more random movement, according to Robert Bassett, an observational astrophysicist who studies galaxy evolution at Swinburne University in Melbourne, Australia. Elliptical galaxies are thought to be a product of a galaxy merger. So that's where we're headed, as I said, with when we merge with Andromeda. So when you think about a galaxy merger, why don't I finish reading this sentence and I'll talk about that. Elliptical galaxies are thought to be a product of a galaxy merger. When two galaxies of equal mass merge, their stars start to tug on one another with gravity, disrupting the star's rotation and creating a more random orbit, Bassett said. Okay, so I read that paragraph. So let's talk about a galaxy merger. So you think it's 400 billion stars in the Milky Way, 1 trillion stars in Andromeda, and when the two galaxies merge, man, there'll probably be a lot of collisions, a lot of fireworks, or that's what I thought. But then something else I read says that there's a lot of empty space in between stars. So, for example, the next nearest star system to us is 4.3 light years away, so there's a lot of empty space. So if two stars, if a bunch of stars from that galaxy and stars from our galaxy, they might not even collide. They might come close to each other and gravitationally affect each other. So there's a lot of random things that will happen. And the fireworks, what I read said there won't be as much fireworks as many people think, just like when the Big Bang came into existence. Was it a Big Bang? Well, what I was convinced later from my readings was that no, the Big Bang wasn't a bang. It was just like something flashed into existence. Okay, so not every merger results in an elliptical galaxy. The Milky Way is actually quite old and large, but maintains its disk shape. It's been added to its mass by simply drawing in dwarf galaxies, which are much smaller than our home galaxy, and collecting free gas from the universe. Sorry about that. However, Andromeda, our disk-shaped sister galaxy, is actually headed straight for the Milky Way, Bassett told Life Science. So billions of years from now, the two spiraling galaxies could merge, and each of the dual starry disks will offset the other's rotation, creating a more random elliptical galaxy. These mergers are far from instantaneous. They take hundreds of millions or even billions of years. In fact, there are ongoing mergers that are moving so slowly from our perspective that they appear static. So says Bassett, quote, they've basically been in the exact same state, unchanged for all of human civilization, end quote. Hubble gave these galaxies their own classification, irregular galaxies. To look at them, they're actually a mess with multiple components. Irregular galaxies just look like a big train wreck. So that would be something, a process that could take a long time. So what I understand is that when the two galaxies, Andromeda and Milky Way, are moving towards each other, they will fly past each other, and then each of them will turn back around and slowly move towards each other again. And like this just said, it could take a long time for them to merge. Okay, so finally, so there won't be all these fireworks that you might think there would be. Finally, a less common shape, lenticular galaxies, seem to be a mix between elliptical and a disk. It may be that when a disk galaxy uses all its gas and can't form any new stars, the existing stars begin to interact. Their gravitational tug on one another creates a shape that looks like a lentil, kind of elliptical, but still a rotating disk. What scientists have uncovered so far about galaxies and their 3D shapes has been inferred using the thousands of 2D images and relying on other properties such as galaxy color and motion to fill in the blanks. For example, the younger age of disk galaxies is corroborated by their blue color. Blue stars are generally larger and they burn faster and hotter. Blue light has a higher frequency and is less more energetic than red light. Meanwhile, elliptical galaxies are filled with older stars called red dwarfs that aren't burning quite as hot or fast. Still, despite all we have learned about the massive celestial structures around us, there's so much we don't know. So says Hummels, and quote, galaxy formation and evolution is one of the biggest open questions in the field of astronomy and astrophysics, end quote. So that's one of the things that interested me in the beginning when I started my junket into astronomy, was galaxies. And when I spotted the Andromeda galaxy in my telescope, it was so exciting. And I suppose that what astronomers do, like that really, really are, that are serious about it and that's their job, what happens is they, when they look at a telescope, I think what happens is the image comes later. So what happens is the telescope is pointing towards what they're trying to examine or study. And it's not like they sit here all gaga-eyed and say, wow, look at how beautiful that picture is. What they're doing is gathering data and working the computers, because as I understand it, when you're doing something in astronomy like that, you have to write an algorithm and a lot of things could go wrong. So it's not like they're sitting up there looking at beautiful images through their telescope. I believe it's a thing of gathering data and then later processing the data. And there might be a final image, but it's not like they're sitting there saying, wow, look at that beautiful picture or look at that beautiful sight. So that's what I saw from these shows. When you see astronomers in action, they are sitting there on their computers, working them, not really looking at what a picture might look like. So that's one of the things that I thought that would be really interesting to have, to go out way up in the mountaintop and like Hawaii, point your telescope at, let's say, the Virgo cluster or something, or certain galaxies, and spy them up there. And the pictures might look beautiful, because what happens, this is what I believe what happens, is when they're taking images, they are accumulating the light, and it could take a long time. It's not like they just take a quick photo, like, for example, someone uses their iPhone and takes a photo, there they have a photo. It's not like you're going to snap a quick picture of a galaxy and expect to see something marvelous. It could take quite a bit of viewing time for the light to accumulate on the photographic plate. And so that's why astronomy itself is different than what you might think. You pick up a book and you say, wow, look at that beautiful picture. And it's not what astronomers see. That's according to what I think, because you have to accumulate the light for a long time, and then they're processing all this data. So we talked about galaxies. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to take a break. So this is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Are you interested in human rights and social justice? Come check out Amnesty International UBC. We fight to stop human rights violations all over the world, including here in Canada. Our club hosts letter writing sessions, social events, documentary nights, bar fundraisers, and current events discussions on a bi-weekly basis. So keep your ears open and check out our Amnesty International UBC Facebook page for more information. We look forward to promoting human rights with you.
Welcome back to AstroTalk. This is Marco. Now I'm going to talk about Elon Musk and his journey to Mars. So this is an article on LiveScience.com. It is dated Sunday, which is October the 18th, and title of the article is Elon Musk says SpaceX first Starship trip to Mars could fly in 4 years. So it has a beautiful picture of Elon Musk rocket taking off. Sorry, my computer is messing with me. When I'm trying to toggle my mouse, it is somehow I hit something where it's either making the pictures and the text bigger or smaller. So got to try to avoid that. SpaceX is almost ready to start building a permanent human settlement on Mars with its massive Starship rocket. The private spaceflight company, headed by Elon Musk. Sorry, this is doing this again, so sorry about that. The private spaceflight company is on track to launch its first uncrewed mission to Mars in as little as 4 years. SpaceX founder and CEO Elon Musk said Friday, October 16th, at the International Mars Society Convention. So says Musk, I think we have a fighting chance of making that second Mars transfer mission, says Musk in a discussion with Mars Society founder Robert Zubrin. That window Musk referred to is a launch opportunity that arises every 26 months for missions to Mars. So I just learned something. The flight opportunity window is 26 months. NASA, China, and the United Arab Emirates all launch missions to Mars in July of this year. The next window opens in 2022, with Musk referring to the 2024 Mars launch opportunity. So if it arises every 26 months, and it did it in July of 20, then it would do it in September of 22 and November of 24. The mission will launch the Red Planet on a SpaceX Starship vehicle, a reusable rocket and spacecraft combo that is currently under development at the company's South Texas facility. SpaceX is also planning to use Starship for missions to the moon starting in 2022, as well as point-to-point trips around the Earth. Isn't that so cool how this person can have a company like that that's doing this kind of stuff? Musk has long said that humans need to establish a permanent and self-sustaining presence on Mars to ensure the continuance of consciousness as we know it, just in case planet Earth is left uninhabitable by something like a nuclear war or an asteroid strike. After I finish this article, I have to somehow fix this, because what I did is I accidentally clicked on something, and every time I try to use the wheel of my mouse, it either makes the text and the picture very small or very big. So I'm sorry about that. All these pauses are happening because this mouse thing. The mission will launch to the Red Planet on a SpaceX Starship vehicle, a reusable rocket and spacecraft combo that is currently under development at the company's South Texas facility. Musk has long said, but SpaceX doesn't have any plans to actually build a Mars base. As a transportation company, its only goal is to ferry cargo and humans to and from the Red Planet, facilitating the development of someone else's Mars base. So cool. SpaceX is, so says Robert Zubrin, Mars Society founder, and quote, SpaceX is taking on the biggest single challenge, which is the transportation system. There's all sorts of other systems that are going to be needed, end quote. My personal hope is that we're going to see Starship in the stratosphere before this year is out, and if Elon is right, reach orbit next year or the year after that. This will change people's minds as to what is possible. And then, you know, we'll have NASA seeking to fund the remaining pieces of the puzzle, or entrepreneurs stepping forward to develop remaining pieces of the puzzle. Quite exciting. Here it shows a picture of a Mars transportation architecture. So again, this article is on LiveScience.com, and the name of the article is Elon Musk says SpaceX's first Starship trip to Mars could fly in 4 years. So that's interesting. The window to go to Mars is every 26 months, and July was the time where the window was for this year. Every time you read more astronomy or watch on TV, guess what? You learn more. If Musk's projections are correct, he is known for offering overly ambitious timelines. SpaceX's first Mars mission would launch in the same year that NASA astronauts returned to the moon under the Artemis program. SpaceX is also planning to fly tourists on a Starship mission around the moon in 2023. Now, wouldn't that be cool? NASA has also picked SpaceX as one of the three commercial teams to develop moon landers for the Artemis program. Musk said Friday that if it weren't for the orbital mechanics, something happened with my computer. So I wasn't playing with my computer, and somehow the screen went off. So I'm sorry. I'll try to get it back on. So give me a sec. I'll just make a couple comments while I'm waiting for my computer to stop playing around with me. So Musk could be a critical element in getting things to Mars, because I remember even 20 years ago, there was all kinds of mention of, oh, there's going to go, we're going to be on Mars by 2020. And now it's 2020, and it looks like there's another 20 years to go. Welcome back. There was a glitch with my computer. It's just suddenly the screen went blank. So I'm trying to continue on with the story about Musk, Elon Musk. He's going to try to send a rocket to Mars in 4 years. So this is on livescience.com. And the name of the article is, give me a sec, please. Elon Musk says SpaceX's first Starship trip to Mars could fly in 4 years. So I'm going to try to continue on. If Musk's projections are correct, he is known for offering overly ambitious timelines. SpaceX's first Mars mission would launch in the same year that NASA astronauts returned to the moon under the Artemis program. SpaceX is also planning to fly space tourists on a Starship mission around the moon in 2023. NASA has also picked SpaceX as one of the three commercial teams to develop moon landers for the Artemis program. So it looks like Elon Musk is really involved in the space business, and I just can't wait to see what's going to happen, because with NASA itself, it has to have private people in there, private companies, to work with it. It can't do everything itself. And if Elon Musk is on board, that means that things could go quicker than what they did for so many years. As I said, I think President Bush, and whenever he was president many years ago, he said, we're going to go to Mars by 2000. So hope this goes quicker. And I think what I was thinking the other day, in 400 or 500 years, maybe this will bear fruit and we'll have habitation on Mars. Who knows? Or on other moons of the solar system. So it's a very exciting time, but it's going to take a long time. So Musk said Friday that even if it weren't for the orbital mechanics that call for Mars's launch every 26 months, SpaceX would maybe have a shot of sending or trying to send something to Mars in 3 years, adding that Earth and Mars won't be in the best position, but the window is 4 years away because of them being in different parts of the solar system. Musk unveiled plans for SpaceX Starship plans in 2016. The project aims to launch a 160-foot or 50-meter spacecraft atop a massive booster for deep space missions to the Moon, Mars, and elsewhere. Both the Starship and its Super Heavy booster will be reusable. This year, SpaceX launched two test flights of Starship prototypes called SNS and SN6. SN5 and SN6 from its Boca Chica test site in Texas. Those flights reach an altitude of 500 feet or 150 meters. SpaceX is currently preparing another Starship prototype called SN8 for a 12-mile-high, 20-kilometers test flight in the near future. So that's the end of this article. Now, isn't that an exciting life this Elon Musk is living? He's an engineer, but he's got, it looks like, the capital and the drive to make this happen. So let's see what happens in the future. Let's keep track of what Elon Musk. Wow, very cool. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the zeposecond. So what's a zeposecond? The shortest unit of time ever measured. So I believe the Planck length is the shortest length. It's 10 to the minus 16 meters. So now we've been introduced to something called the zeposecond. I never knew there was a zeposecond. So this is an article 2 days ago, which means it is the 17th, and let's read it. It's called Meet the Zeposecond, the shortest unit of time ever measured. A particle of light, so here's a drawing or an image. It says a particle of light, called a photon, produces electron waves out of an electron cloud of a hydrogen molecule. The result of these interactions is what's called an interference pattern. The interference pattern is slightly skewed up to the right, allowing researchers to calculate the time for the photons to get from one atom to the next. So that's how they're measuring the zeposecond. So again, it's the article is Meet the Zeposecond, the shortest unit of time ever measured. Scientists have measured the shortest unit of time ever, the time it takes a light particle to cross a hydrogen molecule. That time, for the record, is 240 zeposeconds. A zeposecond is a trillionth of a billionth of a second, or decimal point followed by 20 zeros and a one. Previously, researchers had dipped into the realm of zeposeconds. In 2016, researchers reporting in the journal Nature Physics used lasers to measure time in increments down to 850 zeposeconds. This accuracy is a huge leap from the 1999 Nobel Prize winning work that first measured time in femtoseconds, which are millionths of a billionth of a second. This is a trillionth of a billionth. It takes femtoseconds for chemical bonds to break and form, but it takes zeposeconds for light to travel across a single hydrogen molecule, H2. To measure this very short trip, physicist Rainer Dorner of Goethe University in Germany and his colleagues shot X-rays from the Petra 3 at Deutsche Electron Synchrotron, DESY, a particle accelerator in Hamburg. The researchers set the energy of the X-ray so that a single photon or particle of light knocked the two electrons out of the hydrogen molecule. A hydrogen molecule consists of two protons and two electrons. Let's read that again. The researchers set the energy of the X-rays so that a single photon or particle of light knocked the two electrons out of the hydrogen molecule. So this is an H2 molecule where there's two hydrogens, looks like bonded. The photon bounced one electron out of the molecule and then the other, a bit like a pebble skipping over the top of a pond. These interactions created a wave pattern called an interference pattern, which Dorner and his colleagues could measure with a tool called the cold target recoil ion momentum spectroscopy. Wow. COL TRIMS, cold TRIMS, reaction microscope. The tool is essentially a very sensitive particle detector that can record extremely fast atomic and molecular reactions. The cold TRIMS microscope recorded both the interference pattern and the position of the hydrogen molecule throughout the interaction. So says Sven Grundmann, a study co-author at the University of Rostock in Germany. And quote, since we knew the spatial orientation of the hydrogen molecule, we used the interference of the two electron waves to precisely calculate when the photon reached the first and when it reached the second atom. End quote. That time, 247 zeposeconds, with some wiggle room depending on the distance between the hydrogen atoms within the molecule at the precise moment the photon winged by. The measurement is essentially capturing the speed of light within the molecule. So says Dorner in a statement, and quote, we observe for the first time that the electron shell in the molecule does not react to light everywhere at the same time. The time delay occurs because information within the molecule only spreads at the speed of light. The results were detailed October 6th in the journal Science. Ooh. Interesting. Okay. So now I'm going to go for another break. And when I come back, we are going to read more, not galaxy, 11 fascinating facts about our Milky Way galaxy. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.
Accessibility.
Disability.
Mental health.
ADHD and ADD.
And many, many more topics we explore and cover.
But where?
On CITR's All Access Pass.
A unique and collectively run show on equity, inclusion, and creating awareness for people of all abilities in BC and around the world.
Catch us every other Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 4.
If you want more info or want to get involved, please find us on Facebook or send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Hey,
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASA UBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CRTR 101.9. Now I'm going to talk about 11 fascinating facts about our Milky Way galaxy. Yes, there is some very fascinating facts. I hope they just don't spit out facts like data about its length or something. Okay, it's dated October 16th by Adam Mann. It's in Live Science. And again, it's 11 fascinating facts about our Milky Way galaxy. So it shows our Milky Way galaxy there. How much do we know about the city? How much do you know about the city you live in? Sure, you've got your favorite restaurants and the best way to avoid traffic during rush hour. But it's unlikely you know the details of every urban nook and cranny. The same goes for the galaxy you live in, the Milky Way. I never thought of it that way. Our celestial home is an awe-inspiring place full of stars, supernovas, nebulas, energy, and dark matter. But many aspects of it remain mysterious, even to scientists. For those seeking to better know their own place in the universe, here are 11 enlightening facts about the Milky Way. I'm glad they're enlightening facts. Okay, number one, the Milky Way's name is ancient. Before the advent of electric lights, everybody on Earth had an unobstructed view of the night sky. The enormous milky band of stars crossing it was impossible to miss. Ancient peoples gave different names to the cloud-like structure of our galaxy, but our modern version derives from the Greeks, who had a myth about the infant Hercules being brought to the goddess Hera, who nursed him while she was asleep. When she awoke and pulled away, her breast milk spilled across the heavens. The source of the Greek name itself has been lost to the ages. Matthew Stanley, a professor of history of science at the Gallatin School of Individualized Study at New York University, previously told Life Science, and quote, "It's one of those terms that's so old that its origin is generally forgotten by now," end quote. I like the one about what's that elephant in Hindu culture where Ganesh. He has a broken trunk, so I heard a couple of stories about that, different versions. One of them is he saw the gods fighting in the sky. He had no pen, so he broke off his trunk to use it as a pen so he can write down what was happening. The second version, or another version, there's probably a lot of versions, was that the mother was bathing the baby, or the young boy, in the bathtub, and he was misbehaving. So his father up in the sky zapped him and turned him into an elephant. So he was so angry, he snapped off his elephant trunk and threw it up at the sky. So that's Ganesh. So there's lots of myths in astronomy too. Number two, we're not sure exactly how many stars are in the Milky Way. I thought they were sure, but I guess they're not. Counting stars is a tedious business. Even astronomers argue over the best way to do it. Their telescopes see only the brightest stars in our galaxy, and many are hidden by obscuring dust and gas. One technique is to estimate the stellar population of the Milky Way is to look how fast stars are orbiting within it, which gives an indication of the gravitational tug, and therefore the mass of the galaxy. Divide the galactic mass by the average size of a star, and you should have your answer. But as David Conrich, an astronomer at Ithaca College in New York, told Life Science sister site space.com, these numbers are all approximations. Stars vary widely in size, and many assumptions go into estimating the number of stars residing in the Milky Way. The European Space Agency's Gaia satellite has mapped the location of 1 billion stars in our galaxy, and its scientists believe this represents 1% of the total. So perhaps the Milky Way contains about 100 billion stars. I thought it was 400 billion, but we'll see. I thought that Andromeda has 1 trillion stars. Okay, anyway, number three, fact about the Milky Way. Nobody knows how much the Milky Way weighs. On a related note, astronomers are still exactly unsure how much our galaxy weighs. with estimates ranging from 700 billion to 2 trillion times the mass of our sun. Getting a better grasp is no easy task. Most of the Milky Way's mass, perhaps 85%, is in the form of dark matter, which gives off no light, and so it is impossible to directly observe. Recent studies looked at how strongly our galaxy's humongous mass gravitationally tugs on smaller galaxies orbiting it, and updated the estimate of the Milky Way mass to 960 billion times the mass of the Sun. Interesting. Number four, the Milky Way is probably in a big empty spot in the universe. Wow, cool. Several studies have shown the Milky Way, have indicated the Milky Way and its neighbors are living out in the boonies of the cosmos. From afar, the large-scale structure of the universe looks like a colossal cosmic web, with string-like filaments connecting the dense regions, separated by enormous, mostly empty voids. The emphasis in that last sentence should be on mostly empty, since our own galactic abode seems to be an inhabitant of the Keenan, Barger, and Kawi KBC void. I never knew about voids before. And about this Keenan, Barger, and Kawi void, KBC, named after three astronomers who identified it in a 2013 study in the Astrophysical Journal. Last year, a separate team looked at the motion of galaxies in the cosmic web to provide additional confirmation that we're floating in one of the big empty areas which Live Science previously reported. Number five, astronomers are trying to photograph the monster black hole at the Milky Way center. Lurking in the heart of our galaxy, a hungry behemoth with the weight of over 4 million suns lurks. Scientists know that it's there because they can trace the path of stars in the Milky Way center, and seeing that they seem to orbit a supermassive object that can't be seen. But in recent years, astronomers have been combining observations from multiple radio telescopes to try and get a glimpse of the environment surrounding the black hole, which is packed with gas and dust spinning around the black hole's maw. The project, called the Event Horizon Telescope, expects to have preliminary images of the black hole's edge in the coming months, according to the team's blog. I thought they already took that, so it's called the Event Horizon Telescope. I think they linked up a lot of telescopes all over Earth to make a giant-sized telescope. Okay, number six. Small galaxies orbit the Milky Way and sometimes crash into it. Well, I think what happens is, for example, the Large and Small Magellanic Cloud, maybe they crash into it, but also the Milky Way is tearing them apart, and there's something called the Magellanic Stream connecting the Milky Way and the Magellanic Cloud. And apparently stars are floating or moving from the Magellanic Cloud into the Milky Way. So I'm going to read this. When Portugal explorer Ferdinand Magellan sailed through the southern hemisphere in the 16th century, he and his crew were among the first Europeans to report on circular cluster of stars in the night sky. These clusters are actually small galaxies that orbit our Milky Way like planets around a star, and they have been named the Small and Large Magellanic Clouds. Many such dwarf galaxies orbit ours, and sometimes they get eaten by our massive Milky Way. Earlier this year, astronomers used new data from the Gaia satellite that showed millions of stars in our galaxy moving in similar narrow needle-like orbits, suggesting they all originated from an earlier dwarf galaxy dubbed the Gaia Sausage. Interesting. Number seven, the Milky Way is full of toxic grease. Let's read about this. Swirling through the mostly empty space between stars in our galaxy is a bunch of dirty grease. Oily organic molecules known as aliphatic carbon compounds are produced in certain types of stars and then are leaked out into interstellar space. A recent study found that these grease-like substances could account for between a quarter and one half of the Milky Way's interstellar carbon, five times more than previously believed. Though strange, the findings are cause for optimism, according to researchers, because carbon is an essential building block of living things. Finding it in abundance throughout the galaxy could suggest that other star systems harbor life. Interesting. Number eight. Okay, here it goes. The Milky Way is going to crash with its neighbor in 4 billion years. So what I read a few years ago is from infrared studies. These infrared studies suggested that the Andromeda was bigger than thought. So, and if that is true, then it's possible that the Milky Way is bigger than thought. That means they could collide in less than 4 billion years. Anyway, let's read this. Sad to say, but our galaxy isn't going to be here forever. Astronomers know that we are currently speeding towards our neighbor, the Andromeda Galaxy, at around 250 miles per hour, or 400 kilometers an hour. So I believe the moon is 400 kilometers away from Earth, so that would be like going from Earth to the moon in an hour. Interesting. When the crash comes in about 4 billion years, most research has suggested that the more massive Andromeda Galaxy would swallow up our own and survive. But in a recent study, astronomers reweighed Andromeda and found it was roughly equivalent to 800 billion suns, or on about on par with the Milky Way's mass. This means that exactly which galaxy will emerge less scathed from one future galactic collision or crash remains an open question. So again, as I said earlier, it might not be a class, it might be a very slow merger. So that doesn't mean that stars won't interact. They will, and they'll gravitationally affect things. Number 9, stars from our galactic neighbors are racing towards the Milky Way. Let's read about that. Movie stars in films are known to swap spit, but who knew that galaxies in the universe sometimes swap stars? Researchers were recently searching for hypervelocity stars, which get thrown at mind-bending speeds from the Milky Way after interacting with the giant black hole in its center. What they found was even stranger. Rather than flying away from our galaxy, most of the fast stars they spotted were barreling towards us. So says Tommaso Marchetti, an astronomer at Leiden University in the Netherlands, and quote, these could be stars from another galaxy zooming right through the Milky Way. Interesting. His article was published in the September 20 version of the journal Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society. In it, the author suggests that these odd stars could have originated in the Large Magellanic Cloud or some other galaxy far away, and write in their paper that the discovered objects may constitute the tip of the iceberg of a large population of similar stars. Cool. Number 10. There are mysterious bubbles arising out of the Milky Way. So here's a picture. It shows gamma ray emissions, X-ray emissions, the Milky Way, and big bubbles emerging out of the top and bottom in the center of the Milky Way. Interesting. Imagine. So again, if you want to have some fun, sorry, I'm going up to the top. This is called 11 Fascinating Facts About Our Milky Way Galaxy. It's written by Adam Mann, M-A-N-N, on October 16, 2018. That's fun to read this stuff. I really like this article. Imagine discovering that your living room, which you've seen a million times before, contained a previously unnoticed elephant. That's more or less what happened to scientists in 2010 when they uncovered gigantic, never-before-seen structures stretching for 25,000 light-years above and below the galaxy, named Fermi bubbles. After the telescope that found them, these gamma-ray emitting objects have defied astronomers' explanations ever since. Last year, a team gathered evidence suggesting that the bubbles are the aftermath of an energetic event 6 million to 9 million years ago, when the supermassive black hole in the galactic center swallowed a huge clump of gas and dust and burped out the giant glowing clouds, according to NASA. Wow, so cool, isn't it? So remember, we live in a cosmic void. We're really in a big void, the MVB void or something. Number 11, our galaxy is being bombarded with bizarre energy pulses from the other side of the universe. So I did talk about this one time. It could have been years ago. Some scientists have traced extinctions on Earth to the wave movement of our galaxy, of our solar system. So our solar system rotates once around the center of the Milky Way, I guess, in 230 or 240 million years. It's called the galactic year. And what happens, it doesn't just go in a straight line, it bobs up and down like in a sine wave. And when it's at the top or the bottom of the sine wave, it goes out of the protective bubble of the Milky Way, and that's when our solar system is bombarded with these cosmic waves. So that's just the theory, of course. But let's read on if that's what it says here. So I'm going to read this again. It says, our galaxy is being bombarded with bizarre energy pulses from the other side of the universe. Over the last decade, astronomers kept detecting odd flashes of light coming at them from the distant cosmos. Known as fast radio bursts, or FRBs, these mysterious signals have no agreed-upon explanation. Despite knowing about them for more than 10 years, researchers had, until recently, captured only 30 or so examples of these FRBs. But in a recent study, Australian scientists managed to find 20 more FRBs, nearly doubling the number of known objects, as Live Science previously reported. While they still don't know the odd flash's origin, the team was able to determine that the light had traveled to several billion light years of gas and dust, which imparted telltale signs of the signal, suggesting that the FRBs were coming from quite a long way away. It's interesting how they know this stuff. So I'm going to read just a little bit more because I am now doing a recorded version here where I'm going to put ads in the PSAs and ads in the recording. So what happens is that I've recorded two different parts. Now this is the third one. So I don't know exactly how long I've gone. So actually what I'm going to do now, I am going to read this article quickly. Physicists keep trying to break the rules of gravity, but this supermassive black hole just said no. So this supermassive black hole says, listen to Albert. This was 4 days ago on livescience.com. A new test of Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity has proved the iconic physicist right again, this time by reanalyzing the famous first ever picture of a black hole, which was released in 2019. That image of the black hole at the center of the galaxy M87 was the first direct observation of a black hole shadow, the imprint of the event horizon, a sphere around the black hole's singularity from which no light can escape. Einstein's theory predicts the size of the event horizon based on the mass of the black hole, and in April 2019, it was already clear that the shadow fits general relativity's prediction quite well. But now, using a new technique to analyze the image, the researchers who made the picture shows just how well the shadow fits the theory. The answer, 500 times better than any test of relativity done in our solar system. That result, in turn, puts tighter limits on any theory that would seek to reconcile general relativity, which describes the behavior of massive celestial objects, with quantum mechanics, which predicts the behavior of very small things. I'm going to end now because I might be going over my time, so thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.